top of page 39.
But those male relations who, in their folly, live on the separate property of women, e.g., appropriate the beasts of burden, carriages, and clothes of women, commit sin and will sink into hell. In other words, Manu defines what is the property of women. There are certain things that are theirs. So men don't live on the... in other words, by selling their property or things like that. That property is there, the women use it, the men get benefit from it, that's fine, but it's their use of it. You know, it's that the men don't control the... I say economics or economic usage of women's property. That's theirs, right? Riti, separate property of women. So this is quoting from the ninth chapter. What was given before the nuptial fire, what was given on the bridal procession, what was given in token of love, and what was received from her brother, mother, or father, that is called the sixfold property of a woman. So all those things, that's theirs. Right, so if the husband gives something to the wife, it's hers. Right, so he can't claim control over it. Right, what was given before she was married, any property she had before she was married that were given as gifts, anything you know that came from the brother, mother, father, like that. What was given to her at the time of marriage, all these things, these are their property. Some call the cow and the bull given in Arsha wedding a gratuity, but what that is wrong, since the acceptance of a fee, be it small or great, is a sale of a daughter. But when the relatives do not appropriate for their use the gratuity given, it is not a sale. In that case, the gift is only a token of respect and of kindness towards the maidens. Right? In other words, here he's pointing out is that gift that's given is something for the girl. Like that. It's not that it's for the family. Otherwise, then it would be a sale. There'd be no difference between the, not Prajapatya, Arsha and the Asura. Right? So that's the difference. The Asura, the money given, is for the family. But in the Prajapatya, in the Arsha, then it's given as respect for the girl. So technically, then it doesn't go to the family. According to tradition, the girl's family is very careful about receiving presentations from the boy's family, as a presentation received from the boy's family and used for themselves may be misconstrued as taking a profit from their daughter. So they'll always, whoever is the girl's side of the family, basically they'll never take anything from the boy's side like that. They can give, but they'll never take. Right, so in this case, it would indicate if something is given, then they would generally pass that on to the daughter or something like that. Okay. Women must be honored by the male relatives who desire their own welfare. Women must be honored and adorned by their fathers, brothers, husbands, and brothers-in-law who desire their own welfare. Where women are honored, there the gods are pleased. But where they are not honored, no sacred rite yields rewards. Right? Because you're doing a sacred rite as a grihastha. So the point is the grihastha means himself and his wife. So if she's not being respected, then you're only dealing with half of it. You're not complete in performing your ritual. Like when Ramachandra went, after Sita went to the forest, for him to do sacrifices, he had to make a deity of Sita Devi, right? A full-sized deity made out of solid gold, right? And so then she would appear in that, and then in this way, then they would perform the rite. So it can't be done alone. So if the women aren't honored, then the demigods won't accept the sacrifice. Where the female relations live in grief, the family soon wholly perishes, but that family where they are not unhappy ever prospers, right? So then we can see how it will work, because it won't last. If you have these families who are prosperous generation after generation, they're dealing properly. Those who are poor and everything like that, they may have this problem, right? Either they behave like that, they become poor, or they're poor from lack of proper behavior, so they just continue that bad behavior. Right, so we see here as Manu counters that element that, you know, the women in the Vedic culture are, you know, considered second-class citizens. Yeah. The house on which female relations not being duly honored pronounce a curse, perish completely, as if destroyed by magic. You know, it's not like, you know, you just see this course of events, it just disappears. You know, like Duryodhana and his brothers are there, and in 18 days, they're not. You know, just everybody's gone. Karna's gone, they're gone, Sakuni's gone, they're all just gone, like that, because they disrespected Draupadi. Hence, men who seek their own welfare should always honor women on holidays and festivals with gifts of ornaments, clothes, and dainty food. Dainty means, you know, nice, fine food, like that. You had a question? Yes.
During that time, today it would be considered very severe. But
yes.
There might be some, you know, less offenses which we might not be so aware or which are not so obvious, but are still detrimental.
It says when they're not doing honor, pronounced a curse. So the point is women are generally quite compassionate. So to come to the point where there's a curse, and that means they must have been dealt with not very well. You know what I'm saying? So it points it out up to this point, not that you made some mistake and so this and that. No, because women will become angry as a point of correction. In other words, because of attachment, then what is yours, you want to act properly, deal properly. So when you don't do something right, then whatever method will ensure the correction, you know, either by not speaking, by, you know, giving instruction, by being, you know, very strong about it, or sarcastic, whatever it is. The idea is that it'll be corrected because that relationship is valued. But what here, when there's a curse, means that's the end of the relationship. It's just cut off. You know what I'm saying? So there's no interest to continue the relationship. So if someone brings it to that in a relationship that's supposed to be there, then that means they didn't deal properly. That makes sense? So one wants to be very careful. So in other words, we can see there's a lot of problem in you know, your Western culture because they don't regard this respect for the women. You know what I'm saying? Previously, that was always, if you're sitting at a table at dinner, if a woman stood up, everybody would stand up. You know, all the men would have to stand up. Then when she comes back, they all stand up. She sits, only when she sits, they'll sit, open the door. You know, all these different things. It was done, it was because there was respect for women. But now that's not there. They weren't dealing. So like in the 50s, kind of like it started to disappear, that respect. They were seen more as objects of enjoyment rather than a position of respect, you know. So then naturally then, you know, the women will separate themselves off from that kind of like interaction. Does that make sense?
Just a while ago, I met one other male person wearing a hat.
Mm-hmm.
And when he met me, he somehow raised his
okay.
Sound. I felt nice.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't seen that. When I
was a kid, I saw
men lifting a hat.
Mm-hmm. That was a nice habit. Yeah. That's another one. Yeah. So there's always this element that it was just women are respected. They're never to be disrespected. So you always would see that before. And so we see this on certain ways socially, they were, you know, things would function better. You know, you may say, you know, things may have been more muddy and stuff like that because they didn't know about asphalt roads and stuff, but but people were, you know, would dress better, would talk better, would interact better and everything. Yes?
Sometimes today, if you sort of courtesy. That's called discrimination.
Discrimination. So that means that them wearing the tank top so you obviously could notice their breasts was not discrimination on their part. Otherwise, men don't dress like that. If there's no discrimination, why don't they just buy these, you know, full, you know, neck, you know, and down to here, things that are kind of baggy through here? Why don't they wear that? You know what I'm saying? You know, so it's these things are just stupid, that's all. It's just, not only do they want the attention, but they want to take more from that attention by saying that you're not supposed to give the attention. But the point of bringing it out, if it doesn't matter, why would they care? You know what I'm saying? Discrimination, why does it mean just there? You can't respect somebody as a person or things like that. You know, it's like you have two businessmen, they're walking up to the door. Does that mean then they both stand there? You know, or something, or just like one opens the door and the other one goes through it, you know, out of a respect or that. So if there's a senior one there or someone is more of a friend or something, then they do these things, you know. So what is the problem with being nice to people? Their point is no one's been ever nice to them, and so now they can't handle that anybody would be, because why would they be? No one was ever nice to me, so why are you being nice? So you must have some reason for this, and that reason must be exploitive, because that's the only way anyone's ever dealt with them, you know? And the fun part is they feel they're exploited as women, but they carry themselves, and their deportment in that is to be exploited. You know what I'm saying? Because the women are dressing in such a way that they make themselves attractive. Yes, they're not necessarily doing that to impress the men. They're impressing the other women that they have more than the other woman's got. You know, but the standard is the attractiveness to attract men. You know what I'm saying? So that's the interesting element is that you're not going to get away from the nature. You can't. So if you explain it, then, you know. But otherwise, yeah. But how many of those ladies do you bump into? You only hear about them now and again. A movie came out, they complain, oh, it's stereotyping the women. You know, I mean, it's like, but you hear, see, read in a review or something here. It's rare you meet them. You know, you bump into them like, I don't know, every so many years, you know. You might bump into one for a moment, they'll make a complaint and go away and never see them again. So they're not actually an important, they're a great minority within women. I'm sure most women would be quite happy if someone opened the door for them or stuff, you know. Yeah, so this is just women who have so had such bad experience in dealing with men in the world that therefore they don't trust anyone like that. You know what I'm saying? But the interesting thing, they might open the door for another woman. You know, but it's kind of like, how do you say? It would be like, how you say? It's kind of like in America, you have African Americans, right? So they can call each other by derogatory terms, but someone who's not African American can't. You know what I'm saying? So the women can, you know, they open the door for each other, do all this kind of stuff like that, but a man can't. So it's inconsistent. It's all on the emotional platform. So it's still totally feminine. You know, a total feminist still acts exactly 100% like a woman. The methods she uses would not necessarily, not say the methods, no, I would say the environments used would not necessarily be traditional. But the methods they use are 100% woman. You can't get around that. You know, it's an impossibility. You know, it doesn't work. In that family where the husband is pleased with his wife and the wife with her husband, happiness will assuredly be lasting. For if the wife is not radiant with beauty, she will not attract her husband. And if she has no attractions for him, no children will be born. If the wife is radiant with beauty, the whole house is bright. But if she is destitute of beauty, all will appear dismal. I mean, it's just the way it is. In the house, if the mood of the woman sets the flavor of the house, she's happy, the whole house is happy. She's not happy, nobody's happy. And if you try to be happy, that was a mistake, right? It's not going to happen. So here, radiant with beauty means the element, radiant means that there's it's the emotions that create the beauty, right? It doesn't mean that she dresses up and makeup, and it means that the mood is right. And then whatever is that form through which she expresses that, that will be there. But it's if the mood's right, then everything's bright. And if the mood's not right, then it will not be bright. That makes sense? So this is what Manu says. So that balances anything that anyone would say before about how, you know, Vedic, you know, this and that, husband's like this. The point is yes, husband's is the senior. He's the one leading. But if he doesn't take care of her and make sure she's happy and satisfied, then nothing's going to happen. There's going to be no children. The house won't be happy. Even if they deal improperly, then the whole, everything will be destroyed. Does that make sense? So that's the point. There's always the balance. Now, this is the fun point, is if I go into, it means we've heard this here, but if I go into a crowd of devotees, you know, men will be sitting one side, women the other. If I look to the men and say, what are the duties of women? Bang, immediately the hands will all go up. It'll all be, you know, follow the man, you know, this or that. Nobody will ever mention this stuff. You know? They'll never. You know, if you say, what is the man's duty? You know, provide the money, provide the house, like that, that's it. You know, that's it. It'll be really terse. The man's just got to bring in some money and make sure that there's a basis there, and the woman's got to serve, she's got to this, she's got to that, just on and on and on, like that. But this will never, never, ever come up. No? And that's the problem. Okay, and you see that this is one of the first things. We haven't even gotten into technical duties yet. Right, we've described that the brahmachari will get married, so what are the considerations? You know, that there's an equalness in nature. Then we've gotten into the what kind of rights are there and what is proper, right? Then we've gotten into that, therefore, now, in you know, what is the conjugal union, what are the rules on that, and then immediately is the honor of women. Then only that, then we'll start talking about other stuff. Degradation of the family. By low marriages, neglecting Vedic study, and irreverence towards Brahmins. By low marriages, by omitting the performance of sacred rites, and by neglecting the study of Veda, and by irreverence towards Brahmanas, great families sink low. For sacrificing for men unworthy to offer sacrifices, and by denying the future rewards for good works, families deficient in the knowledge of the Veda quickly perish.
Right.
Right, so if you say, if you do like this, then, you know, this won't work good, and someone can say, oh, we don't believe in that. This is the kind of stuff that destroys families. But families that are rich in knowledge of the Veda, though possessing little wealth, are numbered among the great and acquire great fame. Right, that's why in the Bhagavatam, the Puranas, then you see that there's going to be two kinds of families that are mentioned, right? Much of the time, these poor Brahmin families and the great Kshatriya families. Why? Because they have the character. They have knowledge of the Veda. They respect the Brahmins. You know, they get married according to the proper methods. They deal proper. That's why. Okay. Topic 8. Topic 8. Now that means we're, by topic wise, we're 1/3 of the way through. Of course, we're only on the third chapter. Some of the topics go for a few chapters. Okay. The five great sacrifices, Pancha Mahayagya. Right. With the sacred fire kindled at the wedding, a householder should perform according to the law, the domestic ceremonies, and the five great sacrifices, and with that he shall daily cook his food. Right. So the fire from the marriage yajna, that is the yajna that's used by the grihastha. In his fire in his house, he uses that fire. So that's just kept burning, right? You do your yajna and then you cover it with ash nicely. You know, put some fuel, cover it with ash. Then the next day you take the ash away, then you'll have coals, so then you put more wood and all that, and then you do you just keep going like that. So that's how he does his yajna, and that is also how anything to do with the Pancha Mahayajnas are all done with this. So that's a very essential point. So we see that not only is the wedding, you know, that this the Upanayanam sacrament for the women, but it's also the fire with which he performs his sacrifices like that. Householder, this rules means the general rules everybody follows as culture, but the obligation that it has to be done is for grihasthas, right? Because it's theirs, right? A brahmachari, it's not theirs. Does that make sense? So grihastha, it's theirs, so that's why then these things apply. Householder has five slaughterhouses, as it were, right? Namely, the hearth, you know, in other words, where you cook, the grinding stone, the broom, the pestle and mortar, and the water vessel, by using of which he is bound with the fetters of sin. Because all these five kill living entities. Right? Maybe not big, you know, it's like you sweep the floor, you didn't kill any cows or dogs or anything, but you know, it's like, so all these, they kill millions of living entities. In order to successively expiate the offenses committed by means of all these five, the great sages have prescribed for householders the daily performance of the five great sacrifices. Right, so the Pancha Mahayajna. So this is also then where Prabhupada mentions this. Right? He mentions this thing is that it's a reality. You have this debt. It's not a matter of, oh, we're devotees, it doesn't matter. The debt is there, but by worshipping Krishna, that's taken care of. But if you don't worship Krishna, then, you know, this is there. It's not a matter of you believe in it or not. It's like, I don't believe in gravity, so therefore if I jump out the window, I won't hit the ground. No, it doesn't work like that. Teaching and studying is the sacrifice offered to Brahman. Right? This is the way you pay back the debt. The offerings of water and food called tarpana, the sacrifice to the mains. The burnt oblation, the sacrifice offered to the gods. The bali offering that offered to the Buddhas, and the hospital reception of guests, the offering to men. He who does not neglect these five great sacrifices, while he is able to perform them, is not tainted by the sins committed in the five places of slaughter, though he constantly lives in the order of householders. But he who does not feed these five, the gods, his guests, those whom he is bound to maintain, the mains, and himself, lives not, though he breathes. Right, those whom he's bound to maintain, the feeding of dependents, such as children, wife, elderly parents, old cows, bulls, etc. And, yeah, so that's connected with the bali, right? So when the bali is to the Buddhas, or living entities, so that would mean whoever is involved, who you're dependent upon, or they are dependent upon you, like that.
Your servants or something.
Yeah, like that. You want to know what's fun? I mean, we'll get to it, it'll come up. What would be the order? Let's say a householder is feeding people. He has to feed, he has some Brahmins in his house, right? He has family members, and he has some friends, and he has himself. Excuse me, yeah, and he has servants. What do you think would be the order that he would feed them?
Friends,
and then when does he feed himself? Yeah, with the friends. In other words, servants are taken care of before the grihastha himself eats. So if there's less food, the servants get. He's the one that doesn't get. right? You know, the modern thing it would be the servants wouldn't get. No, but guests are taken care of, the family and relatives, then the servants, then oneself, like that. Friends eat with, depending on what it is, friends may eat before, but friends, you know, if they're close, they eat with you. If they're not so close, they would eat before. Okay, and himself, maintenance of oneself is connected to the debt we owe to the sages by the study and teaching of the practice of the Veda. Right, so there's many ways that this applies in life. So we see that these five connect with the slaughterhouses, these five connect with all the different who we owe a debt to, and there's different aspects how you see that. Right? Because one may say, well, I'm taking care of the dependents, but you're dependent upon them. The reason you have them is because of our own needs, right? We have family because of our needs, right? Does that make sense? That's what it is. But that need means you're in the relation of dependent. I mean, they're a dependent. But without them, you know, there's no meaning. They call these five sacrifices also ahuta, huta, prahuta, brahmanyahuta, and prasita. Right, 'cause so some of them give it under this names and some of them under other names. So there's different titles. Ahuta, not offered in the fire, is the muttering of sacred texts. Huta, the burnt oblations offered to the gods. Prahuta, offered by scattering it on the ground, the Bali offering given to the Buddhas. Brahmanyahuta, offered in the digestive fire of Brahmanas, the respectful reception of Brahmanic guests, and prasita, eaten, the daily oblation to the mains called tarpana. So here's now from Prabhupada's purport, 141, Bhagavad Gita. According to the rules and regulations of five of fruitive activities, there is a need to offer periodical food and water to the forefathers of the family. This offering is performed by worship of Vishnu, because eating the remnants of food offered to Vishnu can deliver one from all kinds of sinful actions. Sometimes the forefathers may be suffering from various kinds of sinful reactions, and sometimes some of them cannot even acquire a gross material body and are forced to remain in a subtle body as ghosts. Thus, when remnants of prasadam food are offered to the forefathers by descendants, the forefathers are released from ghostly or other kinds of miserable life. Right, that's why they're called, what do you call it? Putra, right? The child's called Putra because put means hell and tra means to deliver. Like mantra means to deliver the mind. Putra means to deliver from hell. So by performance of the Bali, then, I mean not the Bali, the tarpana and these other elements, then one frees them from any of these unfortunate conditions. Such help rendered to forefathers is a family tradition, and those who are not in devotional life are required to perform such rituals. One who is engaged in the devotional life is not required to perform such actions. Simply by performing devotional service, one can deliver hundreds and thousands of forefathers from all kinds of misery. It is stated in the Bhagavatam 11.5.41. Anyone who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Vaikuntha, the giver of liberation, giving up all kinds of obligation and is taken to the path in all seriousness, owes neither duties nor obligations to the demigods, sages, general living entities, family members, humankind, nor forefathers. Such obligations are automatically fulfilled by performance of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that means that but he giving up all obligations. Right? Does that make sense? So if one is performing so many activities because one is obliged in material life, then one is, you know, coming very close to the edge here. So that kind of person should not be very proudly saying, we chant Hare Krishna, we don't have any obligation. Does that make sense? Right, because they're very close to the edge there. They're devotees, so therefore they're chanting. So I'm sure it's not going to be taken seriously. But the difficulty comes is that they're not considering these other living entities, right? Because here in this is that neither obligation of the demigods, that someone is providing everything, the sages, that's why you have the knowledge, that's why there is the culture, general living entities, that you're every moment getting some benefits from somebody in some way, right? You know, just that water comes out of your tap because there's somebody who's seeing that it does that. You know, there's people there fixing the pipes and doing this and that and making sure the water is purified and running properly and, you know, doing all these things. There's possibly hundreds of people involved to see that your water runs out of the tap. So you owe them a debt, you know, like that. Family members, right? The humankind, just in general, and then the forefathers. So one is supposed to develop the respect of all these different classes. So the devotee, because he respects everybody, automatically respects them because he's respecting the Supreme Lord. But if someone is a devotee but doesn't respect these five, that means they don't technically owe the debt of the Pancha Mahayagya, but they haven't gained the culture that is actually going to please Krishna. So one's not going to go back to Godhead. Does that make sense? So the idea of all these things is to develop that culture. That's the whole point of it, is that all these things are worked in, so the qualities you need to please Krishna, you're either getting because you're directly trying to please Krishna and worshiping Krishna, or even if you're not, you're doing activities that make you develop them anyway. You're doing the activity because of your material desire. But to fulfill that material desire, you still have to develop these qualities. That's the thing about the Vedic culture, why we won't appreciate it, because for the Vedic culture to run, you actually have to have good qualities, right? To run in the modern culture, you don't. You have to at least be able to make a show of it, right? You're pleasant to people, nice to people, but if you try to live with them, then it doesn't work like that. Right? You go to India, and so then on the street and dealing with them, it looks like it's terrible. But if you live with them, there's no problem. Right? But the Westerners, you meet them on the street, this, that, they're all very nice, very careful. They move out of the way, you know, they don't, even when they're riding their bicycle, they'll ride way around where the ducks are so the ducks don't get scared, everything. But if you try to live with them, it's not going to work. You understand? This is the illusion. Like that. The Vedic culture, the reason it's not appreciated because you have to have these qualities to make it work. And nobody wants to make that emotional effort. They simply want to make the physical, mechanical effort, and that's it. But the qualities also need to be there. Does that make sense? So that's the element that is not actually underlying not appreciated. It won't be the one directly said. And the interesting part is when they attack the Vedic culture, they always try to undermine that these qualities don't exist. So therefore, we can throw it out. You know? Let every man in this second order at least daily apply himself to the private recitation of the Veda and also to the performance of the offering to the gods. For he who is diligent in the performance of sacrifices supports both the movable and immovable creation. Right, so the second order will be Grihastha Ashram. So let him study the scriptures and let him be involved in sacrifice, right? So in other words, there should be study of the scriptures and preaching, some way connected to, you know, the Samkirtan mission. If he does those two, then everything will go nicely because then all the movable and immovable living entities are all taken care of because it's only through sacrifice that the universe is maintained. That's why it gets very dangerous when the demons stop sacrifice because they'll say, then the demigods become weak and they'll become more powerful. But what they don't understand is that they'll also become weak because all the maintenance of the universe is coming through sacrifice. Right? Artha is only coming through dharma. There is no other way. Right? Yes.
I wonder about this depth to the sages and everything. You mentioned about, for instance, those who can provide the water. So that's
No, that's not the sages. That's that. I mean, the sages are studying the scriptures.
So I wonder, then you pay this debt by paying taxes to the government.
No, that's because you want a peaceful environment in which you can live. That's why you pay taxes. Right? Because the government has to protect, but they can only protect if they have facility. So taxes are for your protection. You understand? That's a different thing. So they're providing these things, but the point is you paid the tax, but the point is are you an individual? Do you feel you did something for the government? You paid your tax. Right? I'm a tax-paying citizen, therefore I have the right to vote, I have the right to be heard, right? But you paid your tax, so now it's done. You have nothing to say, right? Isn't it? No?
Yes.
Okay, so then the point is because we feel we have something to say, so why wouldn't that the individual actually, you know, did put some effort into seeing that you got some water, why wouldn't he get credit for that? Even though you're saying, well, he got paid. But he didn't have to do a good job. He could have sat in his desk, you know, all day and only did 15 minutes work. You know what I'm saying? He could have cheated, you know, the government and therefore cheated you. But he didn't. He did his work. So that the individual is willing to do that, that means you owe him, you're obliged. Right? So you can't take care of all them, so therefore there's the balidan. Does that make sense? One wonders if they actually have to move it up and down, or they just do that so that they look busy or something. Does that make sense? Yes.
I want to ask about when we actually pay for the water. It means that we are out of debt.
You're out of debt to the government who made the arrangement, but what about the individual that actually took part? So basically all you have to be paid and that's it. You got dinner, that's it. Your payment's done. You arranged the house, you got the boga, you got dinner. Everything's even, right? You're satisfied, no? Or would you like somebody to smile at you? So that's the point, is we're people. So that people are voluntarily taking part in the process, you're benefited. Right. Here it won't explain so much, but if we go into the detail, we can try to find it when we come across it. The Balidan, then you'll be surprised how many living entities live in your house and take care of your house. It means that there's one that takes care of your bed. You know, that your bed functions properly, there's somebody. And everything, the doors, the windows, this, that, all the different directions, all everything. There's tons of them. A full Balidan is done, I'm not sure at how many places, but it's like done at something like 12 or 16 places around the house. And that's taking care of generally categories of people like that. And these are all subtle living entities. You know, various kinds of ghosts and other things like that, that they have their jobs. Right? Like that. So you're taking care of them who are doing some benefit for you and taking care of your dependents. So it's done by doing the Balidan and by supporting your dependents, and that takes care of that group. But otherwise, there's more people than that, but at least you can't deal with everybody. You know, it's not like every day you have to go down to the water department and go down and, you know, say, hi, thank you, you know, this, and then go over to the electrical department, hey, you know, cool, you like that. Then over to the roads works, oh, yeah, thank you, know. So it's just, it's taken care of by this, right, because ultimately, it goes back to government, and that goes back to the, you know, higher living entities. So this is how they're taken care of. So the demigods that deal with the direct things, and then all the other things, you know, so like that. Is that okay? Yes.
What about the people that live off welfare? I mean, they're doing it their whole life. They just receive and
the neighbor. Yeah. I mean, one, they must have given a lot of charity to be able to get that much. You know, they must have given some charity to get that much, but whether they'll ever get in the future, that's another thing. You know, it's one thing is you have to see what is the reason that they're living like that. If they're living like that and doing full-time devotional service, then who's maintaining them gives, the government gets 1/6 of their devotional credit. Like that.
So it's actually good to, as a devotee, to go on welfare.
If it's full time. It means for a Brahmin. But if they're doing welfare and then just sitting around and eating and sleeping, then that's you know, a waste. You know, you're supporting a lazy person. And sometimes they'll do that. You know, I think Prabhupada tells a story of there was a king, and there was some discussion about those who are unfortunate and can't do anything. So somehow or another, then they set up, it was decided to set up a house. I think it was the prime minister, it may have been Tenali Ram, I think it was him. So they set up a house that would be for anybody who can't work, can't do anything, you know, is unable to, you know, like that. So then the government will take care of them. There's a place to stay and there's something to eat. And so then, as soon as it was announced and known, so many people came to that house. And they were all there. And so once they were all there, then Tenali Ram then told the assistant, says, now light the house on fire. So they lit the house on fire, and then everybody ran out except two guys. And two guys were left sitting there. And the fire's going on. They know there's a fire. And then at one point, then one of them turns to the other and says, it's getting a little hot on this side, you know. So they rolled over so the fire would be on their back. And then when Tenali Ram said that, then he says, feed those two. They actually need it. Those are bona fide lazy guys. They do absolutely nothing. So, like that. So it's there is the element of taking care of those who can't do and things like that. So someone who's disabled can't work, this, that, but someone who can work and won't work and is not serving Krishna, that's pretty useless. So that kind of a thing. They're not going to materially develop, they're not going to spiritually develop, because they're unwilling to work. That laziness gets in the way. So the idea is that if the government's supporting and one's doing full-time service, then that's fine. But if not, then better, you know, one is trying to do something. In other words, due to laziness, one should not be working on government subsidy. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Why did he do that? You know, I didn't tell him to do that.
No, devotees come up with sometimes really bright ideas that don't work so good. Yes, yeah, so they had to go and get him out of the hospital. Okay. And oblation. Now he's talking about sacrifice, how the fire yagya works. An oblation duly thrown into the fire reaches the sun. From the sun comes rain, from rain food. Therefrom the living entities derive their subsistence. Right? So that's how it works. It goes to the sun evaporates the water. Right? When the water then comes in touch with the moon, it turns into clouds and then rain. The rain produces the grain, the living entities, like this, and then the cycle just keeps going. Then the living entity is born, he grows up, he performs sacrifice, so then the sun, like this. Bhagavad Gita 8.4 purport. The Chandogya Upanishad describes the Vedic sacrificial process. On the sacrificial altar, five kinds of offerings are made into five kinds of fire. The five kinds of fire are conceived of as the heavenly planets, clouds, earth, man, and woman. And the five kinds of sacrificial offerings are faith, the enjoyer on the moon, rain, grains, and semen. So the enjoyer on the moon will be forefathers. In the process of sacrifice, the living entity makes specific sacrifices to obtain specific heavenly planets and consequently reaches them. When the merit of sacrifice is exhausted, the living entity descends the earth in the form of rain, then takes then takes on the form of grains, and the grains are eaten by man and transformed into semen, which impregnates a woman, and thus the living entity once again attains a human form to perform sacrifice, and so repeat the same cycle. In this way, the living entity perpetually comes and goes on the material path. The Krishna conscious person, however, avoids such sacrifices. He takes directly to Krishna consciousness and thereby prepares himself to return to Godhead. Right, so that's how the sacrifice goes in a cycle. Yes. Well, that's how one comes down from the heavenly planet, is rain.
So it's not like if my brother died today, he would go up to heaven?
No, no. I mean, you can end up that way anyway. So it's just a matter of that they fall, demigods fall from the heavenly planets as rain. Yeah, well, it's just a matter of, you have to see what's the arrangement. You know what I'm saying? Depends upon, it's just arranged how you're going to get to that position. So the point is the demigods get to that position by following in the rain, then grains, then semen, then they get the human form. That's how they work. But someone else may be going to hell after time in hell, then go through so many animal bodies, and then from there, then be elevated up into the... No, it's not that only, that's how they work. You know, it's just like the common person, you know, he rides a bicycle, he walks, he takes the tram. You know, some people are fortunate enough, they have a car. But the demigods, they always ride around in cars. That doesn't mean that no one else rides around in cars. But does that make sense? That's the system, how it works. Does that make sense? You know why it's rain? No. So we've heard that on the heavenly planets it's deathless, right? So no one dies in the heavenly planets, right? So when it's time to die, you fall from the heavenly planet. So you're not in the heavenly planets, you're in the space. Because you've fallen out of the heavenly planets, you know, you're in the space, then the rakshasas and that, then they come and they eat you. And so being eaten by a rakshasa, you know, while you're falling through the space is not what you call one of your more ecstatic moments. So the pain of that, then the soul leaves the body through tears, right? So then they fall, the soul falls in that drop of, the teardrop as rain. And then they come down here and then take birth. Then they're in the grains, then they go into human life.
So,
no, that's, they fall through there. I'm saying, is there a soul in every car? No, the ones that are moving around, there's people in, and ones that are not are just sitting there, right? So the rain is the medium through which they fall, because it's also condensation of the water that the sun has pulled up from evaporating the ocean. You know what I'm saying? So you get that. But the demigods, that's how they fit in. Okay? Yes?
Also, the animal eats the grain. And I'm just thinking, these souls, they travel through only through this cycle? Or?
No, the demigods do, but they're going to end up in a human birth. From demigod, you're going to be a grain, and then you're going to be human. That's going to happen. It's not that you're going to end up by, you know, some other method. So that will happen with them. But other living entities, how they'll get there, then they have their other processes. Because, does that make sense? So they may be following the impious. In other words, those who are following the pious going from the heavenly and then coming down, they'll come through that way. But those who are coming up from the hellish, then, you know, there may be some other arrangement, how they got into the grains.
How does the management work of those souls who are waiting to accept different bodies, because it must be billions and billions at the same time.
But the
in the
means which bodies?
Different, like human bodies or other bodies. It has to be some management done.
Yeah, no, it's big management.
Where, you know, how
it's
a huge thing.
It's big management, yeah. So we're sitting here with our, you know, 10, 20 devotees in the temple and a few hundred in the community and thinking, wow, I need a vacation, right? You know, so, and Maya's dealing with unlimited living entities and placing everyone exactly. In other words, that bladed grass that's sitting there amongst the rocks next to the, you know, the right side of the left, you know, how you say, line of the train, that's exactly where they're supposed to be. They get their exact amount of water and sun and people stepping on them and, you know, everything else. So that's serious management, you know. No, but there's no problem. Because the point is, if it doesn't work out here, she'll move you to another universe. You know, if there's not that exact right spot next to the railroad track, then she'll move you to another universe where there is. There's 33 million.
33 million. And they all cooperate and work on these things.
Yeah. They're all, I mean, as far as doing their job does, they all cooperate. As far as their personal life, sometimes they don't cooperate, but.
You say she?
She?
You said she organizes.
So.
Why?
This is not going to start an issue, is it?
No, no, no.
See? The universe is managed by a woman. Yeah. The universe is managed by a woman, but she has that strength because behind her is a man. Like that. Yeah, Maya manages. She's Trigunamayi. She's arranging it. But the direct thing, that's done by, you know, a particular demigod. You know, like that. Yes.
What kind of people are those demigods who have human bodies?
Demigod, well, which ones? Means there's various kinds of demigods. Mm-hmm. Means generally when we say demigods, we are referring to those who have, you know, the main offices and stuff like that, you know, who deal with, you know, Indra, Vayu, Yama, you know, Kuvera, like this. They're dealing with major departments of the universe. Then you have, I think, what's called the Karmendriya. So those who deal with all the different functions of the body, like there's somebody who deals with, you know, when something happens, your hair on your body stands on end, or, you know, stuff like that, you know, the does that make sense? You know, earwax is happening and, you know, stuff like that, you know. So there's demigods that deal with all that, you know. You can imagine there's a demigod in charge of pimples, right? You know, so, you know, so, you know, so. So then they deal with all that. Then you're going to have your just common residents of a heavenly planet. They don't have any position. They're just there to enjoy the pious credits that they had. Does that make sense? So those persons may or may not be devotees, but the demigods who have, you know, the positions and all that, they're devotees. But they're neophyte devotees. That's why they're there. Like that. Because if they were advanced, why would they be in the heavenly planets? Yes?
So sometimes find out through clairvoyance or whatever that, you know, your brother is your sister from previous lives and all this. So how come they have like they get like a preference of getting born in the same planet or
no? Just
karma?
Who knows when they're talking about? See, because we always notice that it's always the clairvoyance. It's always humans, but we know by the law that Mleches and Yavanas, their next birth is generally not human. So why is it only, they only are able to perceive the human ones, if they're able to perceive at all. You know what I'm saying? Like that. I've only heard of one case where a devotee was telling about how in a, what do you call it? Regression. That and it means, and the regression was done before he was a devotee. And the regression completely freaked out who did the regression thing. Because they always get some human. So he was saying, you know, my body's hard and all this and that, and I'm flying, you know, and he started describing what he was seeing, you know. So he was seeing this building that had all these kind of decorations and towers and everything like that, and he flew in a window, and there were all these like forms there and dressed, and there was this nice plate with all kinds of food, and he flew onto the plate. And then after that, then he was, you know, somebody hit him and he died. And then his next life, he was who he was now. And so the guy who regressed didn't know what to say and this and that. And he talked to different people, and somebody told him, well, maybe try the Hare Krishnas. They kind of know all this kind of stuff, you know. So he went there and described it, and the devotees were saying, well, that's a temple, and this is this, those are deities and all that. And so then he was a fly who he took prasad, and so now he was human. And so because of that, he became a devotee. So generally speaking, somehow or another, they only catch these things, and they're not very good at catching them either, because they're only dealing with what's the situation now, what they're open to, who else happens to be going by, because they don't take into consideration there's ghosts there. And as soon as the subtle body is undefended, then anybody can move in. Right? So anybody can come in and talk and this and that. You know, it must be boring. You know, you're sitting there, you have no body. So here you can come in and do a whole thing, tell your whole story, you know, and everybody thinks, oh, yeah, wow. You know, so that's the problem with these things. Yeah, you know, they're not very scientific. Yes.
Faith.
Means why would you do this, the offering, if you didn't have faith? Right? Because you have faith in the process, therefore you're offering sacrifice. Right? That's why someone who's faithless, then they won't do sacrifice. Or if they do, it's not greatly valued. Does that make sense? Yeah. So all these things that come up, the enjoyer on the moon and all this and that, because it goes back to the forefathers and everything. As all living entities subsist by receiving support from air, even so the members of all orders subsist by receiving support from the householder. Right? So, you know, just as air maintains the body, so the grihasas maintain technically the universe. So if you're looking at the varnashram system from what is the highest in the way of spiritual development or spiritual like that, then you're going to say the Brahmins, and of Brahmins then the sannyasi. But if you're looking at it by what actually maintains and makes the varnashram system work, then it's grihasthas. Right? So therefore, the grihasthas are the most important element in the varnashram system. That if they're not there, you don't have a varnashram system. Of course, if there's no grihasthas, you don't need a varnashram system. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Does that make sense? So you're simultaneously going to get these two aspects. So the sages, you know, the saintly persons and the grihasthas, and if they're, you know, if you have saintly grihasthas, that's even better. Right? Because men of the three other orders are daily supported by the householders with gifts of sacred knowledge and food, therefore the order of householders is the most excellent order. Right? Because brahmacharis, vanaprasthas, sannyasis are maintained by grihasthas. The duties of this order, which cannot be practiced by men with weak organs, must be carefully observed by him who desires imperishable bliss in heaven and constant happiness in this life. Right? So here's the duties of this order, which cannot be practiced by men with weak organs, means without those who don't have sense control. Right? So those who are uncontrolled, they can't be proper grihasthas, therefore they're not actually adding anything to the universe. But those who are sense-controlled and have the good qualities, they're the ones who are actually maintaining, you know, everything. The sages... The sages, the mains, the gods, the buddhas, and the guests ask the householders for offerings and gifts. Hence, he who knows the law must give to them what is due to each. Let him worship, according to the rule, the sages by the private recitation of the Veda, the gods by burnt oblations, the mains by funeral offering, shraddha, men by gifts of food, and buddhas by the Bali offering. Okay, so that's defined all five, right? Now we'll go through one at a time. Prahuta, Balidan. That Brahman who daily honors all beings goes endowed with this resplendent body by a straight road to the highest dwelling place, Brahman. Okay, so 393. Okay. Prahuta. Okay, here, if we look on page 162, or if you don't, whatever it is, this is the full L aspect. Okay. Let him daily perform a funeral. This, the only reason we're reading this is occasionally we do this just so that we're very convinced that Prabhupada's already saved us from following all the rules. So now what Prabhupada gives us, that's not what we call, you know, we chant, we don't care for the rules, right? Because what we just read, that's what we're used to. And we'll say, oh, that's so much, that's so this and so that. No, now we're going to see what is only one of the five, the Balidan, and this is the smallest. What we've taken out is the Prasita, the Shraddharites. Like if we notice, that goes from the bottom, 162, 163, 164, 165, 166, 167, 168, 169, 70. Yeah, goes up to 170. So that means it goes for 8 pages has been removed. And that's, and each one is a detail like that. Okay, so let him feed him in one Brahman. Okay. And the honor of the manes. Okay, no, funeral sacrifice with food or with water, also with milk, roots, fruits, and let him please the manes. Manes are forefathers. Okay, a Brahman shall offer according to the rule of his Griha Sutra. Right, so that's according to that particular Griha Sutra. Probably most devotees haven't even heard of them. Of cooked food destined for the Vishwadeva at the sacred domestic fire in the following deities. First to Agni, next to Soma, then to both these gods conjointly. Further to the gods, Vishwadeva, and then to Danvantari. Further to Kuhu, the goddess of the new moon day, to Anumati, the goddess of the full moon day, to Pajapati, the lord of creatures, to heaven and the earth conjointly. And finally to Agni, Shvishtakrit, the fire which accomplishes the desired result. After having thus duly offered the sacrificial food, let him throw Bali offerings in all directions of the compass, proceeding from the east to the south. That means he's offered into the fire. Now he'll go out and offer in the directions. From the east to the south, to Indra, Yama, Varuna, and Soma, as well as to the servants of these deities, saying adoration to the Maruts, he shall scatter some food near the door, and some in water, saying adoration to the waters. He shall throw some on the pestle and mortar, speaking thus, adoration to the trees. Right, so the mortar and pestle represents the trees and the different living entities. Near the head of the bed, he shall make an offering to Shri, fortune, and near the foot of his bed to Bhadrakali. In the center of the house, let him place a Bali for Brahman and for Vastospati, the lord of the dwelling, conjointly. Let him throw up into the air a Bali for all the gods, and in the daytime one for the goblins roaming about by day, and in the evening one for the goblins that walk around at night. In the upper story, let him offer a Bali to Sarvatmabhuti, but let him throw what remains from these offerings in a southerly direction for the manes. Let him gently place on the ground some food for dogs, outcasts, chandalas, those afflicted with diseases, and that are punishments, with diseases that are punishments of former sins, crows and insects. That Brahman who thus daily honors all beings goes endowed with his resplendent body by a straight road to the highest dwelling place, Brahman. Right. So out of that whole thing, we kept that last half of that last sentence. Okay. That's just the Balidan. So all we did was just say, you do that. It didn't even get into the details of how the yajna went and what mantras you chanted and all that. This is just saying, because that's in your Griha Sutra. Yes?
The goblins, what's the role of the goblins just besides one?
They have different jobs.
In Kali Yuga, they're still around and working?
I think there's more of them around in Kali Yuga. Not that there's less of them. I mean, the goblins, they have their different jobs or duties, but you also have those who are just unfortunate who happens to be ghosts, that's all. You know, if someone dies in an accident, severe accident, or kills themselves, or dies intoxicated, they become a ghost.
So they attracted themselves through these sacrifices?
No, that just happened to be, they happen to be in the neighborhood, that's all. You know, maybe they know something's happening, so they'll get some food, so they'll come. But point is the householder takes care of everyone. Right? There's a letter or Prabhupada says that the householder will feed all the living entities in the house. Even if there's a snake in the house, he'll feed it. You know, in other words, that's the grihastha feeds everybody. That's what they do. So then, by doing all this, then one feeds all the different. Yes.
So for devotee, if you offer food to Krishna, we just, yeah, isn't your whole life around Krishna? Everybody gets automatic.
Everybody gets automatic, but if there's some guests, we take care of them, you know, without any grudging, you know, if there's some opportunity to take care of things, we'll do. But if there's not, then like that, we've worshipped Krishna, so it's done. Because if you worship Krishna, then all living entities are maintained. But it's not, it's because we're aware of that. You know what I'm saying? What you're aware of is what you get the more direct benefit from. What you're not aware of, you'll get benefit, but not as much. You know, so this thing is that, oh, we're devotees, so it doesn't matter. That's okay, but then they have to be aware of why that is. Why would it be that if we chant Hare Krishna, then all these rules are taken care of? Why? They can't explain, then isn't that blind following? You know, and they'll claim that those who follow the rituals, that's just ritualistic and blind following. And they're the improved mind, but they don't even know why. You know what I'm saying? So one has to be careful to that one knows why. Then one is getting that full benefit. He knows that by worshiping Krishna, then that means everybody is satisfied. Because when everybody's part and parcel of Krishna, so when Krishna is satisfied, they will also be satisfied. So if you understand that, you are satisfied. If you don't, even though technically you should be satisfied, you're not, because you think something else will satisfy you. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't make sense. Yeah, kind of. Okay. Means, let's say you're given something, some food. So that will take care of you. You're satisfied. But you think, no, I don't want this food. I want something else. So even though we're part parcel of Krishna, when he's satisfied, we would be satisfied. But we're still thinking, no, I want this particular aspect. Even though it's also another aspect of Krishna. But we're thinking that particular one will make me happy, not this one. That even if you get that one, if you don't see it in relation to Krishna, you still won't be satisfied. So it's seeing something in relation to Krishna that generates satisfaction. Does that make sense? Yes. Yeah. I think. Yeah. That, I mean, you'll get, means it's not that you won't have benefit. It just means as you understand that, you start getting more and more benefit. Like that. That's the point. Okay. Oh, yes.
In the one particular traveling accommodation, there was always some misfortune. Year after year, always something happened. So we had the thought that maybe these like subtle folks, they were somewhere or other not satisfied.
Yeah, you just chant Hare Krishna. Be happy, they'll be satisfied. No, there's no ritual for you to go out and feed the ghosts. Brahmanyahuta, giving alms and feeding gifts, guests. He shall first feed his guests and, according to the rule, give alms to an ascetic and to a student. All right, so he'll feed the guests and he'll give alms to those who come begging. Alms. A twice-born householder gains by giving alms the same reward for his meritorious act, which a student obtains for presenting, in accordance with the rule, a cow to his teacher. Right. So the time of, so what is gained by the student when he graduates and he's appreciating what he's gained from his teacher, and gives a gift, according, one gets that by giving alms to those who need, by those who are begging and things like that, taking care. Does that make sense? So that's the... Let him give in accordance with the rule to a Brahmin who knows the true meaning of the Veda, even a small portion of food as alms, or a pot full of water, having garnished the food with seasoning, or the pot with flowers and fruit. The oblations to gods and manes made by men ignorant of the law of gifts are lost if the givers in their folly present shares of them to Brahmins who neglect their duties. Right? So, as we mentioned before, the gods and manes, when you're doing sacrifices for them, are dependent upon the quality of the Brahmins. So if you're not giving charity to proper Brahmins, or you're not giving proper charity, then you're the other ones of doing worship of the demigods and the forefathers won't have the proper effect. Right? So this one here, the Brahmanyahuta, is a very essential, that it's done, you're giving charity to qualified persons. An offering made in the mouth of Brahmins, rich in sacred learning and austerity, saves one from misfortune and great guilt. But let him offer in accordance with the rule to a guest who has come out of his own accord a seat and water as well as food, garnished with seasonings according to his ability. Right, so Prabhupada mentions about this. Someone, atithi means someone who comes uninvited, like that. And so a seat, water, food, whatever one can offer. Grass, room for resting, water, and fourthly, a kind word. These things never fail in the houses of good men. Right, so everybody has that, right? The place to rest. Right? Grass means a mat. So everybody has a mat, at least something like that. A place to rest, water, and they can speak nicely. So that means anybody can do first-class reception of guests by following these four. But a Brahmin who stays one night only is declared to be a guest, atithi, for because he stays stita, not long, anityam, he is called atithi, a guest. Right? So you have the element of atithi, that it means it wasn't according to titi, it just happened to come. And here then meaning anityam stita, he doesn't stay for long, he's a guest. So someone who just comes and stays, you know, they're not a guest anymore. They drop in category. Right, because there's rules on when, how a guest is taken care of. One must not consider as a guest a Brahmin who dwells in the same village, nor one who seeks his livelihood by social interaction, even though he has come to a house where there is a wife and where sacred fires are kept. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, someone who makes his livelihood by, you know, inviting himself to your house, he's not dealt with as a atithi, right? Doesn't mean you won't feed him, but he doesn't get the first preference, right? Brahmin from the same village, one you already know, everything's like that, he's not an atithi. You deal with it because he's more known, he's more familiar. Does that make sense? Like that. Those foolish householders who constantly seek to live on the food of others become, in consequence of that baseness, after death, the cattle of those who give them food. Right? So householders will always go around and invite themselves. Then they'll become the cows and bulls of those householders in their next life. Like that. Because that way then you're always fed, right? They're going to take care of you. And so that way they're going to get the benefit. You're not qualified, they're feeding you. But now if you're their cow and they feed you, then you get the benefit of feeding cows. So at least then they're getting more benefit. And you get regularly fed. So, you know, it's win-win right here. You know, everybody gets something here. A guest who is sent by the setting sun in the evening must not be driven away by a householder, whether he have come at supper time or in an inopportune moment. He must not stay in the house without entertainment, right? So this is what a guest is. He's coming at this, just at this time in the evening because he's traveling. And then, you know, the sun goes down so you can't travel anymore. So just whoever happens to be there, then he goes to their house, right? That's the atithi, technically, you know. So then he must not stay without entertainment. So this is what makes the difference between feeding this Brahmin and feeding someone from your village or like that. It means he'll be with entertainment. You know, it means one is that there's the food, but the house, basically what happens means is that the house, the normal activities basically stop and you take care of the guest. For this other person, you don't stop the household activities, you simply accommodate them into it. Does that make sense, the difference? Right? That's the... Like when a friend comes over, you don't stop everything and everything just revolves around them. You just add them to what's going on. Does that make sense? But if a senior devotee comes over, the household just stops and everything happens around them. Does that make sense? You know, it's like, say, this is the time when the children do the homework. No, they'll come down and see the guest and things like that. Then they'll do these other. In other words, it takes precedence. Well, if they're not a titi in this category, it doesn't take precedence. Yes?
Does the visiting guest, if he's a brahmana, is he obliged to the family to give some blessings? Or?
You want to know if you're going to get something from all this work. The point is, it depends how they deal and everything like that. Naturally, you're going, if you take care of somebody, you're going to get their blessings.
But there's no ritual for that? Or
just no, there's no ritualized. Just like there is in most houses you go to, there's no ritual for feeding you, other than, you know, yeah, if you're hungry, there's the fridge, you know, like that, so.
I mean, like, they come and somebody has to touch their head or something?
No, it's just... Why do you want to ritualize this? You want to make sure that you get the benefit?
We went into one family and I didn't know how to behave. And they exactly did what you described now.
Okay, so that just means that you sit there and when they all come and offer respects, then you pay attention to them and speak nicely.
We were eating, they were all watching us, you know, they didn't want to eat before.
Yeah, so that's just a normal thing. That's standard. Yeah, so that's all. Just be fortunate that only one served you. I have where then the person serves, and then when you won't take any more, then they send the little girl. You know, oh, she wants to serve. You know, but I'm already full. No, please. You know, and then when that now you won't take, then they send in the old grandmother. You know, so you go, oh, she wants also. You know, like this and that, and so this way they just completely. So if you only had one person serve, you did okay. So don't worry 20 are standing there. Worry if 20 are serving. But that's the meaning of taking care of a guest, is that you take care of everything because something may be needed, someone has to run to get something and this and that. And that's the meaning of entertaining. Otherwise, they're just sitting down there eating, you're eating, and no one necessarily pays any attention. Like that. But that's the meaning. But, you know, specifically it means only one day. You know, we'll see that if someone is willing to do this for 3 days, then that's considered very pious. But the obligation is one day. You know, so a guest should move on the next morning. He comes in the evening, he's there for the night, he's fed, and in the morning he goes. That's standard. Because that, people can stop their life for that. But if you're going to keep on staying, then the rules change. Right? But if they'll offer that for 3 days, then that's considered very pious. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's just as the host has these obligations, the guest also does.
We saw here one lady, she came and she picked up the plates of the devotees and started washing them. They said, you never see this in the West. Like.
Yeah, because she knows something you don't. Who picks up the plate gets the benefit of having served the prasad. That's why if you go to the Indian's house, they'll serve you prasad, you don't take the plate, because if you take the plate, they don't get the full benefit of having served prasad.
If you take the plate from the ground...
Yeah, take it and go wash it. Whoever removes the plate, they get the benefit of having served prasad. So here, servers will come in, and you know, as quickly as possible, serve, and you know, and they give you this much, and then if they come back in 30 seconds, you don't want again, then they say, oh, nobody wants, so they'll sit down and eat, and as quick as they can, they'll get up and leave. So, you know, like that. But the person who comes and takes the plate, they get the benefit of serving. So they take all the plates, they get all that benefit. You know, plus you have the element serving the Vaishnavas. You know, so all these different things, you get so much benefit. Well, Westerners think that's for the new bhaktas. But you see, when you go to these trained or qualified people's houses, the new people don't serve. The servants never serve. They have servants. There's 20 people standing there. Guaranteed, if there's 20 people standing there, they probably have at least 5 or 10 servants. But they're not serving. They're not cooking. You know, like that. So they'll serve. Those who are qualified in serving, they'll serve. And that's it. The man of the house, or, you know, the elder children, you know, who are mature and experienced in that and stuff like that, they'll serve. The lady of the house will serve. Like that. But we have this idea that the new bhaktas, they should serve because everybody else is senior, and so we don't do that. But in the Gaudiya tradition, technically only those with second initiation are qualified to serve prasadam to Vaishnavas. Now, if you're serving just new bhaktas serve, okay. But if you're serving second initiated devotees, technically only second initiated devotees are qualified to serve them. Means we're talking about who picks it up and takes it away and cleans that place. But someone else could wash the dish like that. But what's the problem with that? I mean, what was his name? Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj. He'd do kirtan, he'd also cook. No, there was another one. What was his name? I can't remember. I think it was also one of Prabhupada's godbrothers. But he would cook. Like when devotees would come at Gaur Purnima, he'd come and he'd cook. Then he would serve prasad. Then he'd clean up afterwards, clean the kitchen, wash everything. Then he would eat. That's pakka. That's first class. Like that. So, you know, he'd do that. He'd even sit outside, because devotees don't know who he is. He'd sit outside with the water pot to wash hands. When devotees would come out after serving, when they come out after eating, he tried to wash hands. So a lot of devotees, they didn't know who he was, and they didn't realize he was like one of Prabhupada's godbrothers or something. So then, you know, he'd get away with that. But people would know it, oh no, you know, go around like that.
So it should be the same person serving and taking the place?
Not necessarily, but it's those who are serving would generally, the group that would be the ones who would clean up. But if others want to help, then you can do that. I mean, you can work it out. But this idea is that, well, I've served, so I don't do that, or I'm senior, so I don't do that. This kind of stuff, this is the Westerner's concept of, you know, one-sided seniority. You know what I'm saying? That's what, when we're saying dysfunctional, is because you can only deal with one side. You can't deal with both. You know, it's just like if you were, let's say, you're a devotee, okay, and you go and visit, let's say, for example, an Indian who, he happens to be a member of parliament or one of the ministers for the central government, but you've gone to his house, then even though he's a central government minister, which means, you know, he controls a great amount of India, he serves prasad to you personally. It's not that, well, I'm the big man, so my servants. No, it's just, it's part of ashram. You're an individual. That's your varna. But that's not your ashram. Your ashram is you take care of a guest yourself. So the idea is, if you have devotees that understand and appreciate the meaning and value of devotees, they will serve prasad nicely. A new bhakta doesn't know devotees. They're doing it because they're submissive. But they don't know the value of devotees. They don't know how to serve prasad. They want to eat. So they're not necessarily going to do a good job. Maybe an individual will do a good job, but as a class, they won't do a good job. Does that make sense?
But it's good to let the new one take part of the cleaning in the kitchen and all this.
Yeah. I mean, they'll always have time to serve prasad. They're out on Sankirtan. There's only 3 of them. So, I mean, it's going to happen. So, but we're talking at formal occasions like that. Then you're supposed to have those who are more mature and expert, they're the ones who would be serving prasad. You know, like you're having a Janmashtami program, something like that, and you have your guests. People who know what they're doing, they should be serving prasad. You know what I'm saying? That's the way it works. Because that's one of the main elements. Didati pratigrinati, guhya makati prichati, bunkte bojayate, offering food, receiving food. It's one of the main interactions. So you're going to leave one-sixth of Vaishnav interaction to a new person who doesn't actually know what it means. That's the difference. Yes?
What about the Swedish table? It's become kind of a popular also in Islam, and it's done on these high parties that we go to embassy. You know, it's put on the table and then everybody takes a little bit.
So there's not even someone behind who's serving you from that when you go and stand in front of it. No, but you also have that where there's someone there who stands behind there, and when you want that, they'll serve it to you.
Well, that's in our restaurant in Delhi, for example.
Yeah, but that's just a higher form of this low-class form of arranging prasad service. You know, in other words, it's expedient in that you have so many varieties, who will take what, when they eat, how it'll work, so these kind of things work. Remember, Swedes are Vikings.
I don't know why they call it Swedish table.
Because that seems to be what, but the point is this is, Vikings might do that, because are they all going to be walking in the door at the same time? They have this great regulated lifestyle and all that. That's what they were known for, the Vikings, right? You know, so whenever they're hungry, they walk in, they get something to eat, so it's sitting there. So it works for that. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? But if you have opportunity to serve, you won't use that. Right? Some will say, well, they use it in Chaupati. Have you ever been to Chaupati? It's about, you know, three times the size of this room. You know, maybe four times. You know, there's no space there. It's in the middle of Bombay. And if you have 6,000-7,000 people take prasad, you know, on Janmashtami, then they're coming at all different times and different things. They can't all sit. So therefore, you have all the prasad there. Devotees come and take it and go sit anywhere they can find to sit. So it works there. But if you have a place where you can sit, but the brahmacharis, when they take prasad, sit down in lines and somebody serves. Because it's a small group, it works. So if people think, no, now this is the way to do it, then they're mistaken. It just doesn't work like that. Prabhupada used to serve the prasad. You know, 26 Second Avenue, he'd serve. You know? You know, that 26 Second Avenue, it was a while before the devotees even figured out that, you know, what happened after prasad. They would all just take prasad, wash hands, and go downstairs. Because the prasad was cooked and eaten up in Prabhupada's apartment. And then one day there was one guest happened to be there, you know, just one of the, you know, guys, and then he didn't know what devotees were doing. They just, you know, finished eating and got up, washed and left, and then he was there alone and still kind of eating and sitting there, and there was no one there but him and Prabhupada, and then Prabhupada came and started cleaning up and washing and cleaning the floor, and he just asked, can I help? So then he helped Prabhupada clean up and all that. And then when he came down later, then devotees asked him, you know, hey, where were you and all that? And I said, oh, they're cleaning up. Then devotees found out that Prabhupada was cleaning up afterwards, washing. They never put two and two together. They just know that, you know, there's this fabulous prasad and we all eat and then we all come down. It's great. Krishna consciousness is fabulous. Then they figured out Prabhupada was cooking, serving, washing everything and doing all that. So then devotees started staying afterwards and helping cleaning. But if that devotee, if that person hadn't stayed, they wouldn't have known. Does that make sense? So that's the standard. You see Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's always there in lines. Krishna, how he eats, you know, bosi sadi sadi, in lines. So this idea of that somehow or another, we call them smorgasbord or whatever it is, I don't know what's the real name. Yeah, you know, but so that... if you're dealing with actually serving Vaishnavas, it's a very unuseful method. Because once you sit, you're not supposed to get up. Because in that, if you want more, you have to get up and walk with your plate. This is for Shudras. And no joke, it's for Shudras. Nobody gets up when they're eating. You don't expect someone to get. If someone's sitting and eating, you don't get them up. It's against the rule. You know, so that you have a system that's based on such tenets is extremely low class. It may be worthwhile. Say, Sankirtan devotees are coming in anywhere from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock at night and all that, and they're coming in one or two at a time. Then you have all the prasad there, and they just take as they need and everything like that. But if everybody's there at once, then you sit them down and you serve them nicely. You know what I'm saying? So you have to see that. But it's not that when everybody's there and that, okay, so we don't need so many servants and stuff like that. And, you know, brahmacharis complain, it hurts their back to serve prasad. Great, you know, put them in an old age home. You know, get them out of here. You know, and get some guys that have some, you know, proper health and mentality, let them serve. You know what I'm saying? Yes. Taking the plates, man. You can, but in this case, it's specifically here you've served there, and so they're just a general person. So it's not that there's that great. The point there is that they're getting prasad and getting the association of devotees. So if you take it for them, then they'll consider that to be, you know, more cultured. But it's not as essential. But if you're serving senior persons, then taking that, you would want to do that rather than they taking themselves. Like that. You know what I'm saying? You know, whatever, you have to see what works. If you can have people coming around and taking, and, you know, and then taking and showing where to wash and like that. In other words, the more you can host, the nicer. But according to what you have, what people you have, what they can do, what your facilities, you make something. In other words, we know the standard, and then we get as close to it as possible. You know, so if doing the, you know, what do you call it? Swedish table works, then you do that, you know. But it's not that that's a standard. No, it's not a standard at all. But if that's what works, that's all you can do, hey. You know, if you got three people to serve prasad, you know, and you're serving 100 people, then three people can't serve 100. So therefore, by doing it that way, then nobody feels bad. Right? If you stand in a line with your plate waiting to go up there and get, nobody minds standing there for 5 minutes. But if you're all sitting in a line and someone over there is getting something to eat and it takes 5 minutes to get to you, you feel bad. You know what I'm saying? So just, it works. So therefore you use it. But it's not that this is the answer and this is the thing. No, it's low class. But hey, you know, we'll use it. You know what I'm saying? Cars aren't as good as bullock carts, but if we need, we'll use them. Does that make sense? Could you take your bullock cart on the highway? I don't think so. Ah, okay. Definitely get it, draw attention there, right? Everyone would know what these Hare Krishnas doing riding around in bullock carts. Let him not eat any food which he does not offer to his guest. The hospitable reception of guests procures wealth, fame, long life, and heavenly bliss. Right? Because now here, where guest means atiti. Right? Let him offer to his guests seats, rooms, beds, attendance on departure, and honor while they stay. To the most distinguished in the best form, to the lower ones in a lower form, to equals in an equal manner. You understand? So here it's not, there's no distinguishing between the quality of the guest. The more higher the guest, the more greatly is offered the hospitality. The lower, then the more simple it gets, right? If they're equals, then what they would give you, you give them, you know, like that. Brahman shall not name his family and Vedic Gotra in order to obtain a meal, right? So this stuff, oh, I'm a Prabhupada disciple, you know, you're not supposed to do that. For he who boasts of them for the sake of a meal is called by the wise a foul eater, vantasin, right? Like that. So I don't know if you know the history of this word, vantasin. It's referring to to a sannyasi who was married, then takes sannyasi, then gets married again. So it's considered that once one vomited and then you eat the vomit. So that's the meaning of antasan. Right? So in other words, to get a meal or to get your position there, you use your background and everything else like that to get it, then you'll get it, but it's equal to this. But a kshatriya who comes to the house of a Brahmin is not called a guest, Atiti, nor a Vaishya, nor a Shudra, nor a personal friend, nor a relative, nor the teacher. Right. Hmm? Atiti? Means, in other words, they're not the ones that it's everything's all about them. Right? You will fit them in to, you know, how it fits into the family scene. Of course, they'll get proper attention like that. Does that make sense? Because here is also the guest, the teacher's not a guest because he may stay for some time or do this or that. It's more intimate. With the guest, it's very formal. There's no intimacy there. It's just everything's there at their disposal and everything like that. Means if you want to give them more facility, that's it. But for friends, you'll generally sit down and eat together. Or if you're serving them, it'll be in a laughing mood, joking and interacting. And so it's not based on any formality. But, you know, and it may be, hey, you know, something's happening, you know, we'll eat after 10 minutes, is that okay? And yeah, you know, it's like because of these things. But for an atiti, no, it's all about that and eating at the right time. So it's just about them. When they're ready to eat, that's when they eat. It's not a matter of when you want to feed them. It's when they're ready, that's when you feed them. You know, when they need to rest, that's when they rest. You know, when they're going to do this, that's it. So it becomes totally about taking care of them. Yeah, so you do. But it doesn't mean they're neglected. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so it's just a matter, in other words, how elevated or, you know, how special it is that how much special arrangements? That's based on what's before. Right? Okay. To the most distinguished, the best form, to the lower ones, the lower form, to equals in equal manner. So then you would just apply by that rule. In other words, all these things are there, and then you have to apply these things. In other words, the person can't come as a kshatriya and then claim, well, I'm an atiti. No, he can't claim that. You're going to deal with them according to your ability, but he can't claim that. But a Brahmin could. But he won't. Right? Does that make sense? The Brahmin wouldn't. The qualified atiti wouldn't. Anybody who would is not qualified. So these are also persons who might. You know what I'm saying? You know, the relative comes over and, oh, you got to treat them like a guest, like that. No, they're a relative. So when you eat, they eat. You don't feed them before and it's all about them. You know, so you'll get relatives who'll try to do that. Right? It's one of the annoying aspects of relatives. Right? So the point is no, they're a relative and so they're part of the family. So when the family eats, that's when they eat. If you can make some, means if there is some element of respect there, some specialness, then you'll consider. If there's something else, you know, they're sickly or they're old, then you'll make based on that, because they're sickly. That's why, not because they're a relative. Does that make sense? So the idea is all this is taken together and balanced. Then it gets culture. Otherwise, it's just a set of rules. Does that make sense? So that's the idea, is that all these things are put together. And then, so that's why these things come later, because to be able to balance 20 things is more difficult than balancing one or two. Like that. Yes?
But devotees are offered food in the houses of people who are kind of pious but not very devotees. What is the etiquette to deal with this? You know, one should eat it or one should not eat grains? They prepare the whole feast, invite you.
But why would they prefer a feast and invite you? How would they know that you're going to be there?
They invite you to come.
Yeah, but then before they invite you, you have to stipulate what you're going to eat.
Okay, so if the household is, there is a meat in the household, so one should accept an invitation or not?
Generally, one would say, one will take, fruit, milk, like that kind of things.
And if they are vegetarians?
Then they could cook, but you have to see as well, what are they, what's the thing? Are they doing some other service than just feeding you? Right? If they've done nothing and they're just inviting you, why would they invite you? Right? But if there's someone who comes to the temple and does some service and all that, so some service has been rendered, so then you might consider. But if not, then what would be the reason? Because they're going to benefit, not you. Yeah, so therefore, what have they done for you? Like, Prabhupada wouldn't eat at their houses unless they became a life member. In other words, they had to render some service. But if there's someone who is doing service, then they don't have to be a life member. In other words, if they're a devotee, but if they're not, unless there's a need, you're traveling and you're in that city and there's no place, and so you need to eat somewhere, so then better eat with them than to eat somewhere else. So you have to balance. Otherwise, you just tell them that you just eat fruits and stuff like that, because these are just local Czechs, or these are Indians, or... Yeah, so then they know the standard. If you say we'll only take, we'll only take fruits and milk, then they'll understand.
You meet them once, twice, and they already invite you for dinner. That's kind of...
Then you just tell them you'll...
Embassy,
if it's embassy, then that you want to know them. So then that you just tell them that's, no meat, fish, eggs, no onions and garlic. Like that. So you have to judge what it is. It's just some people that are just some people, so they just want to invite the sadhus. They really want to render service, or they just want to do some pious activity, they want to get rid of their karma. What is it? You have to just see what it is. And then accordingly then judge. But if it's something like that, like the embassy, then you'd definitely, be more inclined. Yes? No, but you offer. You offer. You don't have, that offering doesn't mean you have to get the plate, go out, find a picture, and do all that. It just means that, you understand that Krishna's arranged this, and if he'll please accept it. Well, if this is what you have to eat, and there's, that's the arrangement, then... Why not? Why, the boys out on Sankirtan, they always eat boga, because Krishna will never accept, that, I say, we used to buy, what is it? One of the standard things was you get a can or a bottle of Planters peanuts and a block of Philadelphia cream cheese, How they survived, I have no idea, but, they did. So does that mean Krishna's not going to eat this? This is what you have. Right? Does that make sense? Point is when you could do something better and you don't, then that's where there's a problem. But when that's all there is, then that's what you deal with. At least nothing else will accept the devotion which was offered, even if he doesn't accept what is offered. You know what I'm saying? So you don't have to worry. This is what you have. But in all these... Then immediately we have to always have to be careful. Is that then that means we could eat anything and anyway? That's always the other side. That's why Prabhupada's always so careful on saying anything in the Western environment, because there's somehow or another this concept of balance just doesn't exist. Because it's no in this situation. That's what it is. No, but then it's just always like that. You notice that we go through these rules. That's always the first question. Is now I found a loophole. Now we can it's a matter of the balance. Means you would naturally want to be in a situation where you have proper foodstuffs to offer to Krishna, but if it's something that's not as ideal, but still that doesn't mean it's not offered. If you're going to eat it, it should be offered. Does that make sense? But you know what the standard is. Like we said, you're traveling and you got on. All your clothes and shoes, and you go into the bathroom at the petrol station, and you don't take off your shoes and wash your feet. No, you just wash your hands and mouth and walk out. But when you get back to, you know, the house or the ashram or the temple, then you can take off your shoes and wash your feet and do those things. And it's, so then you'll follow it there. But it's not that, oh, you know, because we have to follow it there, because, oh, there we don't follow it, we don't have to follow it here. There's always these things. No, when it's like this, you do this. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah, you are taking. So that's why you'll avoid it. It's not that you're not, because you're not paying for it. So you're taking the karma and the consciousness. If you pay for it, like, you know, you go out and buy something to eat that the karmis have prepared, then you're only taking consciousness. Karma is not, because you've paid. Like that. Does that make sense? So otherwise, some places, then they'll even just give you stuff. You're staying at their place, but, you know, it's a big enough place, you have your own facilities and kitchen. They'll even give you boga, and then you cook. So who know these things? Because I've had it houses where, you know, said that, you know, take this and that. And they never blink an eye if you say you're not taking grains. Because it's the grains that carry the karma, right? The other stuff only carries consciousness. And then if you have a choice, if you're eating grains, then I mean, if your stomach's good, then only eat things that are pukka. Right? It means, in other words, what's cooked in ghee. Does that make sense? So instead of chapatis, you take puris or things like that. So you'll also see when they do Brahmin feedings, then, you know, it's sweet rice, because it's been cooked in milk, so that means the ghee is there, puris, sabji, this kind of thing. There's no uncooked food, because that also then reduces the karma. But something that's uncooked, you know, like rice, like that, then that carries more karma. And if they're clever, they'll give you something with sesame seeds. That carries the absolute maximum karma. Right? Sesame will carry the most, rice carries, you know, full amount, you know, wheat carries less, stuff like that.
What about beans and dal?
Beans also carry, not as much as rice.
What if you bring a gift when you come, like flowers or something, kind of an old house?
No, that's just a gift, that's nothing to do with the other. Yeah, no. So you know, see, these things, there's no bargain. It's just, no. This is the way it is.
I'm thinking, like, what if you go to your relatives, like your mother cooks for you, and you, of course, you offer it. But
yeah, so that's it. But still, it doesn't mean you don't get the karma. It's just like when devotees cook here, do you get the consciousness or not? Yeah, so it's the same thing. These are just the way it is. That's why then you arrange the best it is. There's no, like, trick how to get it. We're so used to all these tricks. There's a trick. No, there's no trick. You know, it's just. Yeah.
So why did the family can also practically meditate on, I want to be free from this sin, you know, that I feel sorry. Does it work like that?
People do that. Yeah, they do it. I know it's like you go to these, like Kumbh Mela and that, and you see people out there and they're passing out sweets to the sadhus, but they're always sesame seeds. You know? So it's just they know that these things are there. So they're, in other words, they're doing what you're trying to do in the opposite. They're using the rules for their benefit, and you're trying to use them to find the loophole and the trick. You know? No, the point is that's the culture. So then if that's a nice thing, then it's used. But people use it in ways that are not, you know, ideal. But
does it mean we should not serve this also? Like when people will receive our karma when we have home programs. So does it mean I should not make tahin because it's, you know, sesame seeds?
Oh, you should make tahin. Well, it depends on what you're. If it's tahini and a cauliflower sabji, cooked in Indian style, I wouldn't do it. If it was tahini and falafels, and that kind of thing, then it might work, you know. Or it's what do you call that other? Yeah, so therefore there, but it's still consciousness is there. So if your consciousness is good, then there's nothing there. And if your consciousness is not good, then something's there. So the tahini will carry more of if there's not good consciousness. But that doesn't mean you should then make misu or something, you know. So. You know what I'm saying? You just cook what that menu is, what goes together with that, you make that. You know. What's that? There's another one made with Middle Eastern. It's sesame is dry roasted with other spices, and then they put it on top of things. They cook a focaccia, and then they put that on top.
Does the sesame also carry the karma from the shop and the people touching
it? No, there's nothing. When you buy boga, you've paid. There's nothing there, because it's uncooked. If it's cooked, yes, but if it's uncooked, no. But the thing is they should be qualified that it's worth it. Because otherwise, if you're putting out that much effort in this way, because you can just do a kirtan and do stupid prasad, but why should you be eating their food if they're not rendering some service? Right? If that's the only service they can render, then that would be a consideration. You know what I'm saying? You have to see, there must be a balance in that to try to see what's happening. Okay. But if a Kshatriya comes to the house of a Brahmin in the manner of a guest, the householder may feed him after the above-mentioned Brahmins have eaten. Right? In other words, after the Brahmin guests, then he could feed the Kshatriya as a guest. But, you know, like that. Even a Vaishnava Shudra approach the house in the manner of guests, he may allow to eat at the time of his dependents and assistants, showing thereby his compassionate disposition. So, in other words, the consideration is not that he's not feeding them and not taking care of them nicely, but it's just a matter of when they eat, right? So in other words, the Brahmin would eat first. He would be served, and that would be the attention would be given there. Then after that, if there's a Kshatriya, he would be served in the same way, right? And then if you have Vaishyas and Shudras, they would eat when you'd feed your dependents, right? Because the Grihastha will eat after all this. Even to others, personal friends and so forth, who have come to his house out of affection, he may give food garnished with seasonings according to his ability at the time with his wife. In other words, those ones before, we're saying relative, personal friend, you know, like that. Then they could eat together when he eats with his wife. Does that make sense? Without hesitation, he may give food even before his guests to the following persons, right? So this means if you have guests, that there's the formality that they're going to be fed before anyone in this line, right? Yourself, I mean, the guest, then the dependents, you know, then yourself. Then you can feed these persons before this, right? But it doesn't mean where they're eating. It means somewhere else. Right? Before guests, the following: to the newly married woman, to infants, to the sick, and to pregnant women. Right? So you make that in another arrangement. So it's like the guests would be fed first, but they're in the formal environment where you'd feed them, but these others are taking somewhere else. Does that make sense? But I've been at places where they say, no, they're this, you can feed them first, and they feed you right there in front of you, all these crazy kids and this and that and stuff. That's just they're lazy and uncultured. Yes? No, the pregnant woman. They're all sitting together. But the point is there only one house? There's only one room. Yeah. Only one room. Absolutely. It's a studio. There's only that room and the toilet and that little kitchenette that's connected. Huh? That's a room. You know, I'm... And they're everybody's old friends, then you start with the pregnant woman. And then after that, then you start with the brahmacharis. Does that make sense? But if it's a formal thing where you have senior Vaishnavas and that, but it's going to take some time to make it ready and they're this and that, you can feed the pregnant woman by feeding her in your bedroom. You don't have to wait for when that formal thing has happened and all that. Does that make sense? That's the thing. Like kids, you don't feed them, they yell and scream and make trouble, so they're just fed. But the foolish man who eats first without having given food to these persons does not know that after death he himself will be devoured by dogs and vultures. Right? In other words, those he's obliged. So all his varieties of guests and his dependents, you know, friends, unless he's fed them, he doesn't eat. After the Brahmins, the kinsmen and the servants have dined, the household and his wife may afterwards eat what remains. Having honored the gods, the sages, men, the manes, and the guardian deities of the householder shall eat afterwards what remains. Yes?
One more question. In this way, for those who are at this temple, does it mean that the brother is eating the light of life?
Depends if he's the one taking care of all these things. But if, you know, things aren't necessarily connected, this is in the formal kind of arrangement, because then that's in the temple. Like that, that's slightly different, because there you're dealing with your occupation, right? So here you're saying in your house, then that would be your consideration. If you have a house, if you just live in the temple, then, you know, then the point would be is that if that's the case where you're at the temple, you would want to make sure that everybody has eaten and everything's arranged properly, and then you can comfortably eat. But if you just eat and figure, because you're the president, you should eat, and then you don't worry about everyone else, then that won't work very good. But if you've made sure that that there's arrangement for everybody, and basically you know it's going okay, you know that some spaced out brahmachari didn't mess it up, then, you know, like that. So it would be better. But if you have something that's going on regularly, the brahmacharis are eating there, and you eat somewhere else, then that doesn't matter. Does that make sense? Yeah, that can work, because there it's one is either you're preaching, so you're taking care of the guests, you're hosting the guests, and the, you know, like that, or they're taking you that you're senior, so then they're taking care, so that works, because you're also dealing here with the brahmacharis. As long as they'll be able to do something nicely, then in that case, if they know how to serve, then that's fine. If they don't, then give them something they could, you know, like the drink or, you know, the samosa or something, you know, something that's not going to be difficult. Don't give them the bucket with the soup ladle and try to serve the dry sabji. Yeah, don't give them that. You have to be quite expert to be able to serve in such a difficult, you know, that. I'm not sure why we buy so many ladles. I can't understand why we always have ladles, you know. Yes?
Those who serve in trousers like this, is it proper to do this?
Why, they don't have any else. Means
not the devotees, but these guests, some of them.
It's okay, as long as, you know, because for them, then they're rendering some service. Like we said before, you know, what was that one before? If the dyslexia doesn't get in the way here. If a woman or junior person perform anything leading to happiness, let him diligently practice it, as well as any other permitted act in which his heart finds pleasure. So they want to, out of their enthusiasm, they want to serve prasad, and they possibly would be able to do it, then you engage them, because it's just, you know, it's just some service. Does that make sense? You know, so then you're not dealing with such a formal environment here, you know, like that. Yes?
Some little question from another temple. I don't know, some donation which temple is asking for some. It's not against the rules of the waiting guests. Because we are distributing waiting cards to come to temple, and
Yeah, well, you can just explain that, you know, that, you know, we'd like to carry on this program, make as much available, so whoever can kindly, you know, help in this way and like that. Then it's, you know, it's a pleasant thing. It's sounds good, you know, like that. No, I wouldn't. Because, I mean, originally the concept of the Sunday feast was it's free, like that, you know. So that's the thing. It's one of the preaching elements is that, you know, like that. They pay for books, but the prasad's free, you know. So that's there. So if you can, if, you know, they would be like to give, great. But if they can, nice. If they can't, then... Because the point is by taking prasad, they'll get purified, you know. But at the same time, is then they also have to put up with us preaching to them. You know, so you have the things where people come to the Sunday feast, just want to eat and go, don't want to do anything else. But, you know, send someone, those, that group of persons who always do that, send someone over to talk to them, you know, and discuss the philosophy. So either they'll get purified from that or they'll be more uncomfortable, you know. Yes. But there, are they serving? No, they're also serving. Depends on if they can function, because you serve better if you haven't eaten. Someone who's eaten doesn't generally serve very well. It's just like someone who's full doesn't cook well, so someone who's full doesn't serve well. Just like someone who's full doesn't eat well. So it's just the eating process, all three aspects work when you haven't eaten. You know, so they might consider if they have a problem or this or that, then just take a little something. Don't sit down in a full meal. You know, this idea is that, well, we're going to serve and so we don't get lusty, or, you know, we're going to be for hours. So those things are all bogus. Because generally the ones who are saying that are guys that eat tons and really love to eat like that. It's not. If they're going to die, then take a little something. You know, it's, you know, it's like, that's okay, because you're not, see, are we making a distinction here about when somebody comes to your house and there's no other consideration than yourself eating or not, and a temple, which is a whole organization where you have people who are involved in this that nobody even knows about? You know what I'm saying? Because the point here is, who are they talking about? They're talking about the head of the household. So technically, if you wanted to get into this, then, so they're dependents. So the point is the person who's organizing is going to eat after everybody else. That's the point. You know what I'm saying? So the person who has to take care of the whole thing, they would be seeing that it's all going nicely. Right? In other words, the person leading the prasad service would eat after others. He'd serve the guests, see that his prasad servers have eaten properly, and then eat. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? It's just like this. How does somebody, they get up in the morning, they eat some, like, how you say, corn flakes or something with a little bit of milk. Then so many hours later, they may have like a sandwich. This isn't hardly anything. And then they only eat a full meal at night at 6 o'clock. Right? Sound pretty standard? Right. So that means basically everyone in your temple, this has been their lifestyle their whole life. But now suddenly if they don't eat a full knockout meal by, you know, 3 o'clock, they're going to die. Doesn't make sense. You know, we start in the morning. We cook all day. You know, we do these things. And, you know, you eat 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock or something, whatever it is, and nobody dies. So I don't know what it is. Is it something that the fire digestion is so much better over here? Or, you know, it's a proven fact that the fire digestion has killed many people because it wasn't attended to. It was so vicious and ferocious, you know, like this, you know. You know, what is it? No, it's just they get these things in their head because it logically makes sense. Okay, I got to serve a shot, so I got to eat. What was the solution we discussed the other day of that one Brahmin's wife who wanted to do a very large prasad service to the Brahmins. She didn't want to get hungry. So did she eat beforehand? No, she wanted these special earrings that while wearing them, you didn't get hungry. So there's no question she was going to eat before she finished serving the guests. So in this case is that the guests are only coming at 6 o'clock, so normally the temple devotees will eat and do whatever they do, and then you take care of the guests at 6. But then at 6, everybody should be there and taking care. Not that now that they've eaten, now everyone disappears, and only those three new bhaktas that can't get out of it, then they have to be there to serve a shot. The whole point is that guests get the proper attention. So that's the point, because we're senior, because we're full, because we have something else. I once saw, this was very interesting, we had in Mayapur, because there was just Bengalis, and then there was a few Westerners. So at one point they came up with this thing that Westerners weren't so adjusted to just eating rice. So the big kitchen where all the Bengalis were eating, then it's just rice. It's rice, dal, sabji. But in the they had another arrangement on the inside where the kitchen was that it would be chapatis, but no rice. Like that, you know, very small amount of rice, but that's it. That's all the more you can get. So anyone could eat everywhere they want, but the Bengalis wouldn't want to eat there because you only get this much rice. They want this much rice. And the Westerners wouldn't want to eat on the other side because it's that much rice, they'd rather eat chapatis. So, you know, it basically worked out. Occasionally you'd have one of the Bengalis come over to check it out, but there wasn't enough chili and there was not enough rice, so they would only eat once and go back, and after two or three ate, and then no one ever came again. So it's going on. So now it tended to be is that the Westerners were there, and so they generally had positions, you know, different things than the thing. So, but because it wasn't, there was only the Westerners, who was supposed to serve, right? So this was always a problem. So I remember one day, them all kind of showing up kind of basically at once. And each one sat down and claiming that they had important work to go to, so they could not serve, they had to eat. All of them. And they argued about it for 20 minutes. It only takes 10 minutes to eat, maximum 15. So they could have served and sat and eat and left. But they argued for 20 minutes. You know, about how, no, their service is more important, so they have to go, someone else should serve, and no, but this is more important, this, like that. It was ridiculous. When the authorities who arranged it all found out, then that kitchen was closed and everybody was over on the other side with the rice. Then you didn't have to worry about service because the Bengalis would serve, like that. So you do get that element also. Somehow everybody's, that's what I'm saying. Serving prasad is somehow or another considered like, you know, washing pots or something, or cleaning the toilets. It's only for the new people. But actually serving prasad is on the level of cooking for the deities, serving the deities, like that. It's in that category. But, you know, we have our own idea. Yes?
How one should react when the servers of prasad are testing the patience of those who are being served?
Make sure that next time that they don't serve prasad.
One is a guest, not in the temple.
If it was me, I'd just get up and walk off. That's what I'd do. Better go hungry than have to tolerate the stupid interactions of uncultured people. I'd just get up and walk off. That's all. Like that. And if nobody noticed, never be a guest at that place again. Because there's also rules here for a guest. Never go to an uncultured house. You know, as we saw before, you don't beg from a house that's uncultured. Those who don't know the Veda, who practice all these things, you just don't go to their place. So you just don't go. Then go out and buy something out in the market. You know, you probably do better. That's all. Because that's not their business to test your pain. They're supposed to take care. So if they're testing, that means they themselves don't want to serve. You know, and they dislike having to serve. So therefore, why should they be serving?
Maybe just space out.
Space? Oh, you mean testing your patience in the way of, not that they're doing it on purpose, they're just spaced out. Then you try to ask them for something and like that, and if you get it, great. And if not, then, you know, next time just don't bother. Or, you know, So the problem is because people don't know, so it seems that your Swedish table works better. Because then you don't have to worry about spaced out people who don't know anything about Gaudiya Vaishnava culture. But one thing to note, a huge amount of Chaitanya Charitamrita is about the food. And it gets down to describing how it was served, how it was cooked, how it was arranged, recipes. So if we think somehow or another this doesn't matter, we've missed a very major point. Because it's one third of Vaishnava interaction. So there's no prasad properly, serving is not proper. So then that's one third gone. Then you can't discuss anything confidentially with anybody because somehow or another everyone has the right to know. And so it'll hit the internet within, 5-10 minutes. So then that means the other third is gone. So now it's giving gifts and accepting gifts, but that you have to give to the temple because, you can't get a gift because it all belongs to the temple president. So that means that's God. So basically speaking, by, legal ISKCON documentation, practically, there is no Vaishnav interaction. There isn't any. And then we talk about community and culture and caring and like that. That's kind of like when the guys are standing in line with no clothes on out in the cold to get into the showers and they're being handed out little blocks of soap that are actually stone and they're talking about being clean and work is worship and all that kind of stuff. It sounds great, but it's not. I'm not sure if that made sense, but like that. What do you call it? In the front of Auschwitz, what was it? Auschwitz and Bicca, what's the other one? Yeah, it says, work is freedom. Sounds great. Can, but you can also do both at the same time because nobody eats that quick and runs away. So you can get things and you just see what works nicely. And that's the point. You just see what works nicely. Does that make sense? Like that. Okay. So now is time for our break and then we'll start again in a few minutes. Jai. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.